takes us to our discussion agenda and just one item. I know we left with item 4, but we're going to take item G. And then we'll take item 4, and item G is a non-action item. We invite item G. This is the update on the development of the strategic plan for language access in the California courts.
We do have a request, I think, to make public comment on this matter.
Yes. Okay. We'll have the panelists sit down, inviting.
And we'll have Ms. Gray come up. And she's requested 2 minutes on this matter.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice and council members. Thank you for letting me address you today. I'm here on behalf of the California Federation of Interpreters. My name is Annabel Garay, and I'm a representative with CFI. We want to commend the Language Access Plan Working Group for this tremendous undertaking and for the comprehensive nature of the plan. We appreciate the direction that the plan has taken in expanding language access to all civil cases by 2020. However, we still feel there needs to be more review of other portions, particularly video remote interpreting and limitations in the courtroom setting. CFI believes it is essential for this technology to be implemented in a way that will work and will not jeopardize limited English proficient parties' right to meaningful access to the courts.
60 seconds.
The complexities of language interpreting in court proceedings make VRI risky for every case in courts. This is why there is a need for enforceable policies and guidelines for courts to follow before the use of this technology. These policies should be implemented with a review and oversight process. In addition to dealing with the technical complications that may arise during the use of video remote interpreting, the courts will need to be mindful of the particular challenges that interpreters face during use of this technology, such as fatigue and stress. We will provide more detailed written comments regarding this draft plan by the deadline. Lastly, I want to emphasize CFI's willingness and readiness to work with you. Our professional division is highly regarded nationwide for its education programs, and it's a resource to you in helping California's courts provide meaningful language access.
Thank you. All right, Chief, that concludes public comment on that matter.
Thank you. We welcome Justice Maria Rivera, co-chair of this joint working group for California's Language Access Plan, and Assistant Presiding Judge Stephen Austin, chair of the Court Interpreters Advisory Panel.
Buenos días. Imagínense, si puede, entrar a un meeting como este y no poder entender casi palabra de lo que pasa. Así es para miles de personas viviendo en California cuando entran en nuestras salas de los tribunales. Y para ellos, el sistema de justicia no está funcionando bien. And are you with me?
Yeah, guten Tag.
Language access matters. And we're here to tell you where we're going, I hope, California, so that people can come into court and not hear someone speaking in a language that they don't understand, not understand a word they're saying, and not be able to participate in the process. So, good morning, Chief, Judge Jarre, Justice Baxter, and members of the Judicial Council, and thank you very much for having us here today. I'm sad that Manuel Covarrubias, the co-chair of the Joint Working Group, is not here with us today because he has provided truly wise and knowledgeable leadership for our group. Steve Austin, of course, is the chair of the Court Interpreters Advisory Committee panel, and I can tell you that were it not for Steve and for the chief, this plan would not be on your desk today. So thank you for having us. I'm going to do this as quickly as possible because we want to leave enough time for you to for us to answer specific questions that you might have. And also Steve's on a tight schedule because he actually has his day job he has to get back to. We were here, Steve and I, last October, We were here last October talking about the language access plan. We are back here today telling you that we've actually completed the draft and it's been posted for public comment, and we are very proud of that. Since the group was established in June of 2013, we have been working assiduously on the plan on a very intense schedule. Just as quick background, the makeup of the working group that's been working on the plan is all of the members of the Court Interpreters Advisory Panel, some of the members of the Advisory Committee on Providing Access and Fairness, and others who include court executives, court administrators, a court counsel, a public defender, an educator, and a legal aid attorney. And I mention that because I think the diversity of our working group has been its greatest strength. Beyond that, I would like to add that the court interpreters and the court administrators were really incredibly helpful to us because they really are on the front lines of interpreting issues, and they brought a wealth of experience to bear on the subject. As you know, the working group was formed last June, but we were not able to start our work until approximately November of 2013. And at that time, we had an all-day meeting and developed an outline for the plan and a framework on which to go forward. And by the way, none of this planning process that you see in front of you, if you can read that, would have happened on the timeline that we had without the absolutely Herculean efforts of Judicial Council staff. They have been incredible in acting. I've really been pushing them on a timeline, and they have been incredibly responsive and very, very professional and really working above and beyond to make all of this happen. Steve's going to talk to you in more detail about the steps we went through, so I will just tell you briefly, we had four listening sessions and then three public hearings and then an all-day meeting. Public hearings, and then the staff and the consultant worked together to put together a draft. And then the working group took that draft, and we had an all-day meeting, and I can tell you it was a very, very productive and exhausting meeting. We worked really hard to put together a final draft of the plan, which we cleaned up in a final conference call, and with the approval of EMP, is now out for public comment. Our great hope is that we will be back in front of you after public comment has been folded into the plan in early 2015 for your review and approval of the plan. And before we proceed, I just want to say this, and Steve's going to talk about it a little more. We've been sitting listening to these budget issues and the woes of all the courts, and I want to tell you two things about the Language Access Plan. The first is that we are committed to seek whatever funding we need in a way that does not affect a single penny of court operational budget or funding. And we are absolutely committed to that, and that you'll see that in the plan, and you'll see that as we move forward. And the second is, the good news is, there are a lot of things we can do with existing resources. And we are hoping that that's where we're going to put the front end of our energy, is to work with the existing resources that we have to simply improve what is being done in all of our courts with respect to language access. So now I turn it over to Steve.
All right. I'm going to start with kind of our informational process, which I think was really my favorite part, where the gathering of information through our public hearings and many other written comments and oral comments that were made throughout. We had some informational hearings with big stakeholders. CFI, we had a listening session here in this chambers that was really informative with CFI. We talked for quite a long time with them. We met with the PJs and CEOs. We met with legal aid organizations and other legal services providers, as well as with contract court interpreters that aren't covered by CFI. Had lengthy sessions with all of them. And we had three public hearings, one in San Francisco, one in Los Angeles, one in Sacramento. I just want to echo what Maria said about staff. And setting up those was a Herculean effort. Not just that, but in the whole process of getting this thing done in 6 months, it's unbelievable that they were able to do it. And I just especially want to thank Diane Bullitt, Kat Price, Douglas Denton, Sonia Sierra Wolf, and Ann Marks for their amazing work in putting it all together. We couldn't have done it without them and many other people here at the that worked on the project for the council. The listening, the public hearings, they included oral comments from the public, LEP court users, sometimes in languages other than English, including many native indigenous speakers throughout Central America, languages and which were really eye-opening. I think Maria could echo that, that was part of our presentation, I think, that really made it into the report as well, the needs that we have in those areas. State and local experts spoke, educators, the legislator, a representative from Kaiser Permanente, judges, court staff, attorneys, and of course, interpreters. More than 100 individuals and organizations provided input, and I want to emphasize how important this public process has been. I think I've done that. So, about the draft plan. After gathering all of the input, the group concluded that the plan would be built around a central goal, the provision of interpreters in all adjudicatory court proceedings. So, the draft recommends a gradual expansion of court interpreting services to all civil proceedings so that by 2020, LEP court users will have not just access, but equal access to the judicial system. Beyond that central goal, our task was to develop a comprehensive plan. So what we did was to create a framework of goals and recommendations that would guide the court in providing language access services at all points in time, starting even before an LEP user comes to court, and then at all stages of a limited English speaker's interaction with the court system, from the first contact with the court's website, or first arrival at the courthouse, the clerk's office, and the self-help center, continuing through ancillary events such as mediation, then on to critical court proceedings, and finally to all post-hearing matters such as preparation of orders. And the plan also addresses the continuum of language expertise needed at these various stages. I've already mentioned our core goal, that's to provide qualified court interpreters in all courtroom proceedings by 2020. The group concluded this cannot be accomplished without the thoughtful deployment of technological strategies, which are also included in the plan with appropriate caveats. Other important recommendations are the creation of a framework for a statewide complaint process to help identify and remedy language assistance issues, the development of training programs for judicial officers, court administrators, and court staff on a host of language access issues, including cultural competence and how best to manage a hearing where an interpreter is present. That was a frequent topic of discussion in all of our public hearings throughout the process. Early identification of LEP communities, enhanced data collection, and multilingual signage and printed material. In total, the draft plan contains 8 goals and 76 separate recommendations. Who would ever know that this topic could be so complex? As we went through the process, it became more and more complex as new issues were uncovered. And I think we addressed just about everything that came before us in our final recommendations in the plan. Of course, you're all thinking about how the heck are we going to have resources and funding to implement the plan. Justice Rivera and I were just talking after the presentation that we had just a moment ago, how dire the needs are in our courts. And really, there is no way we could do this without getting new funding in this area. And so we make recommendations in the report for ways to go about doing that and ways to go about increasing on existing funding that we have through the 45-45 program as well. And I think we could expand in great ways even with the existing funding that we have under some of the recommendations that we've made. The plan proposed to set in motion some ways to address the funding issues. We present a global solution for a variety of reasons, the biggest of which is that we need more data to make rational estimates of what all of this will cost. So part of the recommendations have a data collection component so that we're going to be able to, when we go to the legislature to ask for this distinct area of funding, we're able to have facts to back it up. As of today, the draft LAP was released for a 60-day public comment period on July 31st, 2014. The public comment period ends at the end of September 29th. We anticipate receiving comments from key constituents, similar to those we gathered during the drafting process, and all of those were very helpful to us, and I'm sure they will be in completion of the final plan. We encourage your courts and others in your community to take the opportunity to provide any additional input from the public comment process. I was happy when I went to the PJ CEO meetings in Sacramento just recently that they talked about creating a joint maybe working group in order to address public comments to the plan, and that process is going forward as I understand it. One last thing, we never could have completed the plan or made it through this process without the hard work and leadership of Justice Rivera and Judge Covarrubias. It's just amazing to me that they were able to organize and push this thing forward in such a short period of time with such huge tasks, and they did it so amazingly well. Thanks.
So you have the draft plan, or do you have the draft plan?
We do.
Have you read it?
Yes.
All 109 pages. what we're looking to do with this plan is to pave the way for really a paradigm shift in how language access services are provided to the public and the courts. And the goal is that by the time all of these recommendations have been implemented, that just like security, electricity, e-filing, language access is going to be a core court service that permeates absolutely every corner of the courthouse and beyond. This may require some changes in the way courts operate. It will certainly impact the cost of doing business, and we're very aware of that. And frankly, the most perfect plan, and ours is far from perfect, but even the most perfect plan is not going to come to fruition without the council's full engagement and support, and without an equal commitment from the executive and the legislative branch to make this happen. I can assure you, in summary and in closing, that the joint working group itself has engaged fully and conscientiously in preparing the draft plan, and I can tell you also it was not an easy task. There were many, many different points of view that had to be reconciled and pulled together to make this plan a cohesive and coherent and comprehensive document. I would like to add to what Steve said, that without Doug and Diane and Anne and Catherine and others in the Judicial Council staff, none of this could have happened. They were incredible, as was our consultant, Christina Yock, who I must say was terribly underpaid for the work she did on this project. But it didn't matter to her because she's passionate about it. For me personally, this has been one of the most enlightening, educational, and satisfying projects I have worked on since I joined the judicial branch, truly. I was stunned at the complexity of the issues that we had to grapple with in putting this plan together, and I learned so much. And along the way, I have to tell you that our incredibly professional and dedicated court interpreters have been so informative and so helpful in assisting on the task, and I want to thank them as well. Finally, I want to thank the Chief for giving me this very challenging and humbling opportunity, and we're ready for your questions.
Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you. Very ambitious plan. I have three hopefully quick questions. First of all, when this plan is implemented by 2020 or as soon as feasible, it is your expectation that language services will be provided in all aspects of the court, including small claims and traffic?
Yes. And the key is that you have to have a continuum of services. So we focus on using our precious resource of really qualified, certified interpreters for the really important adjudicatory and also court-ordered and court-administered programs. But then we have them have other types of language access for self-help centers, for people at the clerk's office, for post-hearing assistance. And so by making sure you have a continuum of using bilingual employees, using Justice Corps volunteers, using community helpers, that we're able to cover every aspect. Yes, that's the goal.
Second question. I'm not so much concerned with the main languages that we see, Spanish, Hindi, and so on. But there's a lot of languages on this planet. There's a lot of dialects on this planet. I'm not just even talking about Dutch and Romanian and Uzbeki, but there are Mayan-based dialects. There are African languages. How are we going to obtain interpreters in those cases, albeit fairly rare, but still, if we're going to be comprehensive, how do we get interpreters in those areas? Then I have one last question.
Go ahead.
There are recommendations having to do with recruitment of additional interpreters and, in fact, targeting some of those difficult areas that we have parts of now where we don't have adequate coverage or possibly not adequate coverage. There are also recommendations regarding the use of remote interpreting with some, as I said, caveats, and we have guidelines on limits for its use in the report itself. But it especially is useful in situations where you have what we call OTS, other than Spanish, situations where you have a very infrequently used language. We know somebody's in one part of the state who does it, be able to use it for a short appearance somewhere else in the state. And if once we get those kind of things in place, I think it will be helpful in the areas of those kind of less frequently used language.
My final question is the most difficult one. This infrastructure that you're talking about is a huge undertaking, as you well know. We may have the will and the passion and the interest on the Judicial Council to do this, and the judges and the courts may also have the will and the interest and the passion to do it, but it's not going to work without the money. Has anyone done an estimate of the ultimate cost of such a broad, comprehensive system?
There have been, at different times, a variety of efforts in that area. We don't have any firm cost estimate at this time. Part of what we're going to be doing in the first year and two is the data collection component as we expand services so that we get a better idea of what the costs are going to be for the entire amount. I'm hopeful. I know in my context with people. Just Rivera just mentioned also the 2015 report that you're going to be getting next year. I'll probably be here with that because that's on CF. You'll be getting that. And that's actually a new component of that report is to assess some of these areas of cost that we might be able to get into as well to give us an idea later. I'm hopeful, just in my contacts with people at the legislature, and I know in talking with Kurt and Corey and others, there's definitely a willingness and an understanding there at the legislature and this specific item, how important it is. We have a way of funding now for court interpreters. It's a little bit different than other areas of components of funding with the 4545 funds, where we have a silo that can be addressed, and this is like one of those issues that possibly would be able to find ways to interest the legislature and the governor in funding us in this very, very, very important area.
Judge Herman.
Well, just, my congratulations. Extraordinary work. When Justice Rivera started out speaking in Spanish, it reminded me of the clip from Midnight Express that Lance Ito likes to use at the Judicial College where trial occurs in Turkish and the Turkish lawyer assumes the mono English speaking client that the judge likes you very much and things are going very well, and then of course he gets sentenced to life in prison, and it really puts you in the shoes of people who are English deficient and monolingual in another language, the challenges that they face as well as the challenges that we face as judicial officers, because all of us have had the situations where we've had to rely on relative translation or some picking someone from the audience to try to translate, particularly parentified children who, of course, have their own agenda. So this is a marvelous work, and Justice Rivera and Judge Austin, as I mentioned to the council yesterday, the council has just approved our technology plan, and we did mention language access as well as other access issues in that report. But between now and the October meeting, we are going to include more robust treatment of language access, both in terms of not being a barrier, technology not being a barrier, but also that it's an enhancement and an open portal for the purposes of language access, so that it aligns with this very impressive document that you've produced.
Thank you.
One thing you mentioned, Judge Ito, I was just teaching at the college on Friday in another matter, and Judge Ito had his class, and it may be his last class. He's retiring at the end of the year, and I don't, so Laurel back here a minute. I don't know how long he's taught. We're trying to think 25 years he's taught judges on issues in dealing with language access and interpreters, and been amazing for all of us who've gone through his program.
And I want to thank Judge Herman and Justice Berniers for being so helpful in making sure that we were constantly communicating as we were developing our plan and you were developing yours. And I hope that going forward we're going to be able to do that.
Justice Baxter.
Yes, I just have a question on the funding side. Does the plan anticipate any funding outside of state funds? In other words, grants, contributions from minority communities, et cetera?
We have not identified any sources yet, but it's in the plan. One of the recommendations is to be looking for all types of grants, for example, especially for those one-time costs. If you need to buy a really expensive, fancy, excellent video remote system, for example, or something like that, we would be looking for federal grants, state grants, and local grants, and other sources to help us with that. Yes.
Judge O'Malley.
So I know in the report you talk about all the additional training and education and online aspects and all the things that you're going to be encouraging and facilitating and giving to these interpreters during the recruitment and training process. I know, having heard Judge Austin speak many times before with regard to court interpreter issues, that there's a stoppage when it comes to passing the competency test to actually certify them for court. And so, you know, I'm looking through this, and is there going to be also either one, some modification and or, you know, something with regard to that end-all process? You can go through all this beautifully, but if they're not certified, then we're stuck kind of with the small number of limited interpreters that we have. And so how is that going to be addressed?
One thing that I think the report identifies is that not necessarily the changing the testing system itself, but in getting more qualified candidates into the testing system. And by having a continuum of language services and people working within the courts themselves who aren't certified interpreters but are there at the clerk's window and in other places, those types of people have been found to be more successful in passing the test if they get into that, if they have some experience in the court ahead of time. We're going to have a much larger candidate pool that is going to be more likely to pass the test. I think it could end up with substantially more interpreters in the long run.
Thank you. Commissioner Alexander, then Judge Stout.
One of the things in the courts in the remote areas, can there be some kind of extrapolation with regards to what they need for their criminal cases that could be applied to what they would need for these additional case types? Because one of their issues is the fact that they need the travel distance for the interpreters to get to their locations. And then my other question is, I don't remember what Assembly Bill 1657 is, and what does it do, and did it pass?
I was just talking to Corey about that last one. Our fingers are crossed. It's in suspense in the Senate right now, and we're hopeful that it's going to be moving on and get on the governor's desk within the next week. We call it the government code fix. We had that anomaly in the government code back from, I think, the 50s that said that the courts would pay for criminal and the parties would pay for civil and family. And so it was presented to the legislature, met very favorably out of the assembly, and I'm hopefully confident that it's going to be passed by the end of the year.
About the small courts, I think the video remote interpreting is going to be very helpful for all but the lengthy evidentiary hearings. And it would be fairly simple for us to extrapolate the data from the small courts for that. It's much more difficult in a place like Los Angeles or Alameda to extrapolate that kind of data. But I do want to add two things. First, congratulations on receiving the Aranda Award. Secondly, I have heard from some of the smaller and more remote courts that they tried video remote and it didn't work. And I just want to say that I have been told that when courts try to do it on their own without the expertise and the assistance of both the class people, either the class people or the interpreters or people who know what they're doing, it tends not to work. So for those courts who are going to be needing video interpreting more often than not, the expertise really, really counts in that area.
Judge Stout and Judge Walsh.
Thank you, Chief. And I think I appreciate Commissioner Alexander raising the issue of small rural courts and remote access. As you may know, in the Eastern Sierra, there's only one certified Spanish interpreter and pretty much committed to Mono County to our north. And it is a huge financial expense to bring interpreters from, 4 hours away at a minimum. And, of course, the logistics of scheduling and people to show up, how to address their needs at that moment. And so I really appreciate the effort of thinking outside the box to try to find creative ways to provide proper access here. I also wanted to make the observation, I don't know if this is true or not, but it's been mentioned to me with respect to testing, as I think Judge O'Malley was alluding to. Some people do very well, very accurate, have all the qualifications and the ability in their interpretation, but they can't do it simultaneously. And there are some proceedings where we definitely need that simultaneous interpretation, and others where perhaps we can get by with a delay. And I don't know if that bears on the testing or maybe two classes of certification, but it's just something, a comment I wanted to raise for consideration.
Thank you. Judge Walsh, then Judge Alliance.
Thank you, Chief. I want to compliment Justice Rivera and Judge Austin and the members of the group for great work. It's a huge undertaking, obviously. They're really trying to undo the curse of the Tower of Babylon, at least as it affects our courts. I'll be off the council after today, or at least by September, and I'll be heading off to the trial courts, but I'll watch you closely. Please, when this comes back next year, not only adopt it, but don't let it end up on the shelf, as sometimes great reports do, particularly for the lack of funding. This is so important. I can remember the tragedy when I was in family law of deciding whether or not to take away a child from a parent in a language the parent doesn't understand. I mean, it's just, we talked so much yesterday about fairness. It's just simply unfair, and this goes a long way to changing that unfairness. That's what we're committed to, and I urge this group, long after I'm gone, but back there, when I'm back there in the trial courts, please stay on it. Please make this a reality.
Thank you. Judge Alliance?
In looking at the materials, what you talk about bilingual staff. Are you talking about courtroom staff, or is this is out of the courtroom staff?
We're talking about all staff, but they're going to be few and far between. It's very hard to recruit and keep bilingual employees, so it's going to be up to the courts to decide where they're most needed. Usually, they're going to be placed like in the clerk's office at the windows where they interface with the public, and you have, for example, special area for pro pers where they interface with for filling out documents and so on. Most of the self-help centers, I think, have, in the larger counties, have bilingual staff. And that's a critical place where it has to be as well. But that really would be up to the courts. We're just talking about a general principle of the courts making greater efforts to hire bilingual staff.
I understand that. I guess my concern on this, and I think I understand the need for it, my concern is sort of, it makes me nervous to think that my clerks, who are all bilingual, my staff is bilingual, will be talking to litigants with the other party not being able to understand and with me not being able to understand. And they're not, and I think there's, I just think this is, I hope you're looking into that issue also. That will be an awkward situation.
Okay, I wouldn't imagine.
And it wouldn't be appropriate.
On the record, that
wouldn't be appropriate, but if we have bilingual, I'm just, I think the ethical issues of that.
That's the training issue.
Need to be addressed.
Yeah, that's one of those issues of training, I think, that are going to be very, very important. In fact, they're important right now because those kind of things pop up even now, I know. So it's important for us to make sure that we get the right training so that doesn't happen.
So as you can see, there's tremendous interest in this. And I want to add to the compliments, but especially the recognition that this is tremendous work. And I know that this idea came several years ago and we talked about it, but it really didn't gel until, I would say, about a year ago maybe. And, you know, these great ideas, which are beacons for California, never gel until great leaders step up and say, I'll do it. And so when you came into chambers and said you wanted to do this and you could do this, because it was the right thing to do, not because, although it is, a hot button issue nationwide, this is something that we are committed to. And when I met with Tony West, with Judge Jarr and Kurt Child in D.C. to talk about this for DOJ, they were very excited. And when I went to CCJ, the Conference of Chief Justices, they're very excited that California is taking the lead. I know there are some examples out there in other states that have used electronic technology to help deliver this critical service to the courts. I know you've looked at that, and I'm grateful for you moving the ball and getting us to where we are in a place where we can look to adopting a rule and a plan and a strategic plan and a smart plan that will serve California, because it is the equal access of Access 3D. It may be remote access, actually. And in some instances, it will be delivered by physical access. But this is equal access, language access. So thank you, and we look forward to your reports. And we will not let it sit on the shelf, Judge Walsh.
Thank you.